It's cheap too. Very cheap.
Yeah, they generally are. Everybody says mine sounds really good. I think I paid like $25, $27 for it. I only paid a little more for this because of the shape of the microphone was easier for me when I'm sitting. Some of the mouth, the ear ones that you, or face ones, whatever you want to call it, sound really clear too.
Mine might cost me like $3.
Yeah, I think the one I had before this was like seven. Maybe $7 out of Radio Shack. I saw this one in Best Buy and just thought it was the shape of it and the height of it and everything is just in the versatility of it was really handy.
Yeah, this one was only $10 on Amazon.
Yeah, I got mine on Amazon. It was like $3 plus. I don't even think there was shipping, and it's little. There's a mic plug in front of my computer, so it's actually down on the, well, my computer's down on the floor, and it's actually plugged into it, but it's good that you can hear me.
We're just waiting for David to sign in under David, and then we'll start the chat. We'll kind of take these Saturday chats by ear. If we miss one or two during the week for any particular reason, maybe we'll run a Saturday one. But generally speaking, I'd like to keep it 5 days a week. I don't want us to get burned out on it either, you know? Not that it's happening. Right now, it's like I can't wait till the next one. It's kind of fun.
Yeah, I enjoy them. Something to look forward to. I'm actually waking up before 12 o'clock in the afternoon, when my normal awakening time was around 2.
That's a good sign of your priorities in order, right?
Yeah, it is. Well, and I made a promise to you to make an effort and, make a commitment. So, and I know this benefits me, so. Rather selfish.
That's the big thing. I mean, it's one thing to listen to those recordings, it's another thing to be in here real time and to feel the self reacting to being in a room with other selves that are also in an awake state, you know. I'm really doing what I can to hold everybody in as much of an awake state as I two or three other regulars that aren't here, so this is what we have today. Are you recording on that computer, David, or on the other? Okay. And take it we are recording. Do 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 do. Okay. Welcome everyone. This is November 26, 2011. And we have six people in chat. We have Chrissy, aka Aiming High from the UK. We have Ahava from Washington State. We have James, aka New Shoes 88 from Maine. And we have Curtis, aka Cause from Iowa. And we have David from the UK. And I wanted to start today by reading an essay which I wrote just prior to opening the room. And want to later on open it up to contemplation with the rest of you and see if we can flesh even more out of it. Basically, I've been writing something in the websites over the past 6 months or a year that I found out yesterday through the chat was incorrect. So the chat has actually helped me, which is one of the goals of this chat, has actually helped me to further formulate the ontological system. So I'm going to go ahead and read the chat. I'm not going to respond to anybody typing, because I can't see you typing once the window is up. So I'm just going to go ahead and read it through, then I'll drop the mic and see what anybody has to ask or say. The name of the essay is The Mechanics of Dreaming. I'm not referring to the dreaming you do at night in bed. I'm referring to the dreaming that we do in life. The great thing about contemplation is that it points out weaknesses in your ontological system and thus strengthens it over time, correcting any contradictions that become apparent. So few believers of any ideology question their awareness or the validity of their concepts, thus making their faith more of a hobby than an actual commitment. I recently, in contemplation, became aware of an error that is likely written of in essays throughout this website, as well as some of the chat session recordings. The issue is me stating that this reality is a creation of the body. I realize that the body is unable to create anything, that the only creator present is in fact the self, and this led me to further contemplate the nature of the dream itself. The self dreams because it does not utilize its own latent perceptions, but passively usurps that ability over to the brain. This is due to the long journey that the self has been taking up through the evolution of consciousness, from pond scum to prefrontal lobes. The self's capacity for awareness has had to take a back seat to the body's ability to survive in a rather violent environment. One does not have the luxury of contemplation when one is an active member of the food chain. Eat or be eaten, propagate the genes, find and defend shelter, etc. This taking a back seat to the body for the sake of survival seems a perfectly reasonable route over the billions of years that the environment has been a scary, unpredictable stage on which to experience. The trouble as of late is that we have evolved into quite an amazing predator ourselves, and for the most part, after standing upright, have taken our seat at the top of the food chain. So we were efficiently in control of our environment, but woefully unaware of what we were. Evolution of consciousness was never really about survival of the fittest, as much as it has been about survival and expansion of the experience. Over the many years it has took us to get here, one can see a steady march of more complex brains and nervous systems that seem designed for one thing. Experience and the ability to store information garnered from those experiences. The trouble is that the one that was supposed to be doing the experiencing, the self, was passively dormant in the brain. The brain believes that it is the personality that is living. The brain is a machine that is very mechanical in its approach to perceptions and interpretation. As the brain experiences moment-to-moment life, it compares all sensory input to all past sensory input, either through memory or genetic dispositions, and predicts a future outcome, which triggers its next action. All in all, this has been a superb approach for a body to survive, spread its seed, and have some semblance of a good life. If this whole universal production had been about the body. As it happens, it is the self that has the starring role. Unfortunately, the self up to now has not even been aware of itself on the stage, has no idea that it has its own perceptions and interpretations available to it, and has let the understudy brain take all the performances in the spotlight. That is the trouble with dreaming. You are a silent witness to the script, the acting, and the audience's approval and disapproval. The self, because it knows there was any option, has passively lived its life through the filter of the brain's perceptions and interpretations of events. Evolution tipped the scales in favor of the self when the prefrontal lobe was added to the brain. Here was an opportunity for the self to become aware of its awareness, over time to become aware that it was not the body, and that the body's perceptions and awareness were rarely based on anything real in the moment, but rather were based on stored information that had a habit of being recalled at inappropriate times. The self, as many of you have noticed, is not happy with being passive and a prisoner to a scripted life that is devoid of any free will. It has spent the last 10,000 or so years whining, pissing and moaning, and gradually kicking and clawing its way up from the dark recesses of the old brain to take a front seat in the new brain, perhaps with the third eye being the windshield and awakening being the headlights. The mechanics of dreaming are quite simple. It is our inheritance to be passive within the brain. It is where the primary senses are located of sight and hearing, and the brain overall has done a superb job of attaining top billing on the food chain, as well as intellectually removing this particular form of body outside of nature to its new role of human. We may know that we are in fact an animal species, but we do not have to talk about it. As far as the consensus is concerned, there are animals, and then there are humans. This separation from the animal kingdom has allowed us to undertake more lofty endeavors such as contemplate the meaning of life. Unfortunately, all of this contemplating has taken place within the brain's nature of perceiving and interpreting. This is, of course, slowly changing. Once the self gains separation from the brain's perceptions, it discovers it has perceptions all its own. It still requires the body and brain in order to experience, but it now gains the expanded and more accurate visions of its present moment sensing. The self looks through the eyes and sees what is there. It does not need to compare it to past experiences. It sees what is there now. Likewise, with all the body's other senses, the self uses the body to experience, but interprets what it is experiencing now in this moment. The self is not reacting with its environment, it is interacting with it, within it. It is actively experiencing it, not passively responding to it. Most often, the awake self recognizes that responses are not even required. That is something that's really important. Most often, the awake self recognizes that responses are not even required. We are in relative safety, and knowing the mechanics of behavior and cause and effect allows us the luxury of predictability. We truly now can earn that aloofness towards nature. To dream is to give away your awareness and allow the brain to do your perceiving, reacting, and living. To awaken is to actively become what you are and to release who you have been. The brain does not create anything. The brain only interprets what has been created. There is only one ingredient of what makes you you that has any creative ability, and that is the active self. The body brain did not create any of your environment. It did, however, have a say in it, as its interpretations and perceptions have been the driving force behind evolution. I'm going to repeat that. The body brain did not create any of your environment. It did, however, have a say in it, as its interpretations and perceptions have been the driving force behind evolution. Imagine what an awake self with its accurate and expanded awareness can add to the unfoldment of experience and existence. We may truly be able to evolve evolution itself. That was the end of the essay, and about 15 minutes later, in pops some more information, and I'm like, damn, because it's like a Pandora's box. As soon as you start asking questions of your beliefs, you start getting more questions and more questions and more questions, and so I added this second two paragraphs, and then from there, we'll open it up and see if we can add even more, because I'm scratching the surface of something that has a lot of implications. So the response that I wrote was, in contemplation, the thing that got me questioning further my belief was that the body was part of creation. It is a thing, made of the same stuff as all other things. Thus, the body cannot be the creator of its environment. It was part of it. Self was the one unconsciously experiencing, the one dreaming, the one misinterpreting life, the one unconsciously creating. This is important, because this is something that we brought up in almost every single chat, and I want you to listen closely. This has led me to understand that there are not two competing consciousnesses present either. There is only the self, either perceiving and interpreting awake via its own awareness, or identifying with the brain's mechanical yet conscious readings of reactions of its environment. The brain's consciousness is purely mechanical and reactionary in nature. The self dreams the brain's interpretation prior to awakening. And that's kind of where I'm still not quite there, fleshing this out, because the self has always been the dreamer. The self has always been the one perceiving. It's just that rather than perceiving as self, it has been perceiving as the brain interprets things. In other words, it's like putting a pair of dark glasses on. You can't quite see what's really there, but you can still see. Well, the self has been interpreting its environment and its experiences through the brain's awareness. But I'm really not happy with the word brains or the phrase brain's awareness, because I'm not so sure that the brain actually has any consciousness or awareness, because it requires the self. So that's kind of my conundrum right now. So I want to open it up to the rest of you and see what we can flesh out. I kind of realized as I was reading the essay, it would be really difficult for you guys to be thinking of questions to ask as I'm reading through it. So we'll just see where the chat leads us.
It hasn't felt to me that I'm hearing my voice echoing from the other room. It hasn't felt to me that I've been looking at life through dark glasses, though. It's felt as though I've kind of exploded in some way. It doesn't feel like it was really me here all along, but just been able to sense what was really happening. No, I've got a feeling that's not what you were saying, but what I want to say.
Maybe it's a type of thing where you're only perceiving with a small amount of self, something like that, where, you know, brain is part of the awareness. No, that doesn't sound right. But a small amount of self maybe is being pushed through your brain to perceive the world.
I mean, you begin to see the conundrum, because obviously the self has been dreaming for all these billions of years as it's worked its way up. I think the prefrontal lobe is really was added to the brain as a call to this awakening self, almost, so that it could become aware of itself and not identify with the body. Is kind of like the brain and the body is a sensual tool, and what we've ended up doing is interpreting the world through that tool rather than using the tool to experience what was there and then interpret it ourselves. We've taken ourselves out of the equation, if that makes any sense. And that's what I want to try to flesh this out, because I think it's fascinating. It's just one of those things that I caught when I was contemplating. I'm like, there's a big hole there, and I got to fill it in. So that's what we're doing. We're going to try to fill it in. What is the nature, in other words, of the self's dream as compared to what is the nature of the self as it's awakening? What is happening? What's the mechanics of what's happening? And the best I've ever been able to come up with through my contemplations is that we were using the brain's perceptions and interpretation of those perceptions in our lives to define who and what we were and who and what the dream was, and that as you awaken, you become aware that that's incorrect.
Okay, I have a question, and this touches, but you said that What is creating reality? Is it the self that's creating reality, and the body and the brain are just responding to it? Or because you're talking about a different level of consciousness, so I'm kind of confused. Is it the self that's creating and the body and brain just experiencing, or what's creating? And how does that, and how is it affected, like if you're an abused child or whatever, and you have those experiences, how do those relate to it?
Remember that we're not really creating anything. The world as it is already there before we got here. We've always been a part of it. we're a part of creation. Our bodies are. Self is not part of that same creation. Our bodies are part of creation. We don't actually create anything. If you look around you, there's nothing really that you've created. The best humans can do is take something that was already there, a tree, and make it into a house. That's not really creating as much as it's changing a dead form into another dead form. So we don't really create anything to begin with. Our relationship with the rest of creation is where the dream is taking place, or what the dream is about. So it's not that you're creating a situation as an abused child. It's more that you had an experience as an abused child, and your interpretation or perception of it was in error, because you weren't awake or aware enough to be able to process it correctly. You know, a child just simply doesn't understand the human, the adult behavior, so the child ends up processing it incorrectly. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, it does. Thank you for clarifying.
And bear in mind that this is new. I mean, this is all part of this ontological system, and we're trying to figure out what we were doing when we were dreaming and what we are doing now as an awake person. We may not have a point of reference for this, and that may be why it's really difficult to... What I'm feeling from almost everyone in the room is just absolute blockage. So I want to tell everybody, first and foremost, to take a few breaths, relax. We don't have to get the answer right. That's what these chats are for. We have time to work on it over a period of, you know, months or years. We can figure it out. So the first thing is to relax. Don't think so hard into this as much as you want to receive your answer. I was very prone to say that, you know, we cannot change this reality because it is the body's creation. That's not true. The body did not create this reality. The body is part of this reality. We cannot change this reality because we are in a body that is part of this reality, would be the correct way of wording it. We can change the reality by changing the body that we are in. Not here, because again, this is part of this reality. We can change it by ascending to another, higher, more whatever type of body. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Another question. Make sure that I'm getting this right. Now, you said so when things happen, it's the self that's responding, and I believe that, you know, how you deal with things and how you, like, if it's a negative situation, if you choose not to respond negatively to that situation, like, is the self that's making that decision?
It's the self, but it's the self responding unaware. In other words, it's not awake and it doesn't have the correct information. It is using the brain's interpretation of the event. The brain is always comparing to past experiences so that it can predict a future action, such as fight or flight, such as no, I'm safe, this is nothing to do with me, etc., etc. The self in the present moment, if it's awake, can perceive experience in a correct manner, but as long as it's not awake, it is basically perceiving through the mechanics of the brain, which is not a correct point of reference.
Yeah, speaking of that point of reference, everybody kind of has a good idea what the brain, you know, when we talk about the brain, what it is. But what is this? What, when you're talking about the self, what are you talking about, more like our soul, or are you talking more about like the mind aspect of it? And I think that's a important thing to kind of differentiate before we break it down. I mean.
Well, the soul without a body is not going to be experiencing anything. And the soul with the body is the mind, the thinking part, you know, the contemplating part, the interpreting part is the mind. Mind is the soul or self. Soul and self to me is the same thing. The mind is the self plus the brain. The two together equals mind. Mind is not a good, bad thing or indifferent. It's just what it is. Self by itself can do nothing but witness. It can't draw any conclusions from it. In other words, when you go into that state that we talk about, transpersonal state, you don't really draw any conclusions out of it at all. All you can do is witness. It's not until you return back to the brain that you are capable of interpreting what you just experienced. You need the brain to interpret. The idea is, are you actively using the brain to interpret, or are you passively taking the brain's interpretation? This is not coming out right, so let's keep poking away at it. We're getting closer, though. I can feel it.
No, I see what you're kind of saying. It's kind of like, I guess, to, you know, maybe put it in a different visualized term, is that the brain's kind of like maybe a control panel, and the self and the awakening process is the self kind of taking control, or taking or working on that control panel and being the worker, instead of just having the brain or that control panel go on autopilot. So it's kind of like what you were saying in the essays. You're seeing out of you're seeing the true perceptions, and the brain isn't on just on autopilot, something to that, and that's kind of what I'm picturing, and from the essay and from what you're trying to say, and that's kind of the dream, is the brain going on autopilot, which is it picks up from, you know, your expectations from society, and that's how the brain learns. But it's the self kind of taking control, or using, not taking control, but using that control panel and turning the autopilot switch off, and you know, figuring out the control. You know, it's like a big like an airplane control panel or something, and it just kind of keeps trying to discover what buttons do what, especially at the beginning of the awakening process, you're kind of still learning what buttons do what, and I think that's what the self is. And that's what the mind is the self, and the self, you know, figuring out how to use that control panel and experiencing life through, you know, without the autopilot going on.
Sorry, James, I'm just going to take a quick jump on. It's also the self realizing that it even has the option. You know, this is kind of what awakening is about, realizing that there is an option. In many ways, the brain is kind of like artificial intelligence on a computer, you know, and the self is the one sitting at the computer, but the self, because it wasn't very bright throughout the whole process, has been kind of sleeping, while the artificial intelligence has been doing its own thing mechanically. But the self is starting to wake up and realize, wow, this artificial intelligence, this artificial environment is not real. I'm what's real. And I think that's a lot of what's going on now, is that the self is becoming aware that, you know, this mechanical machine that it's in order to experience everything, this mechanical machine that it is in is incorrect in its perceptions. That's kind of what we're doing now, is we're waking up to the idea that its perceptions, its interpretations are, let's face it, almost always incorrect. They're based upon obsolete things, you know, behavioral patterns. Behavioral patterns are based on something that happened decades ago. Most everything that we're interpreting in the world, experiences and such, are obsolete, and that's kind of what we're waking up to, is that the machine we woke up in, that we had to have this machine in order to experience or what have you, this machine that we've kind of woken up in, is really bad at interpreting stuff. And that's kind of what waking up is all about, is saying, hey, wait a minute, its view of reality, its interpretation of reality is way off. It's obsolete in most cases, and we're finding out as we wake up that we actually have a built-in awareness, that knowing, which is far more accurate and based on the present moment, which the brain isn't. Its mechanics aren't.
Yeah, and then the kind of the I guess the awakening process would be kind of almost reprogramming the brain the right way, because once you see how the brain works, you know, it'd be like reprogramming it the way it should be, and that goes back to like the knowing that you just mentioned, and James has mentioned too, and just kind of reprogramming the whole motherboard, and that can take some time, because but it seems like that's kind of what I'm envisioning anyway.
Okay, hello everyone. Oh, sorry, I'm a bit late. Basically, when DC was talking about and everybody's question answering, just an example came in my mind that like the brain is like a horse and the self is like the rider, and at the moment when the rider is sleeping, the rider thinks he's the horse and he's just on the horse, and the horse is taking him wherever he wants. But as soon as he wakes up, the self wakes up, feels it can control the horse and take it wherever it wants. So it knows that I am the rider, and I can use this as a tool or wherever I want to take it. So this example came into my mind, so just want to share with you guys. Thank you.
I was reading one of your essays, DC, a while ago. I can't remember which one, but I had an aha moment when I read this line, and I consider it to be, for me, the definition of self. But like you said, self is being pure witness, and when I'm in the self state, I feel energy emanating out from self, because self can only perceive outwards, and that's why when I go and over across the street and I'm in your presence, I feel energy coming outwards from you, because you are self. And that's just a really, really good definition for me to understand it. And I think it'd be really helpful for other people as well.
Okay, my question is it has a lot to do with this. What is the desire to be around other people? I mean, because we have that inadvertently within us, to desire to be around other people. Is that the self, or is that the body-brain desire?
Well, again, it's always going to be the self, but it can be based on what the body-brain wants, such as mating, or a sense of safety, a sense of community, a sense of belonging, or what have you. It's always going to be the self, because you're the one having the dream. The body's not having the dream. You're having the dream. I was thinking too, as Ali was speaking, this to me was the problem, was this idea that there's two conflicting consciousnesses going on. I just don't buy that anymore, as much as I buy there's two consciousnesses going on. The conflict is really in the self recognizing that the brain's consciousness is not accurate, if that makes sense. To me, because when we started out as pond scum, we just simply didn't have that much awareness. So evolution, God, insert your comfortable word, the body had to have a certain level of awareness so that we would survive enough that we would experience something. And as our awareness expanded, so too did our bodies, because we needed a more complex brain and nervous system, etc., etc. I think the brain is as it is because of evolution, that it was required to be what it is, and the self wasn't asleep because it was doing anything wrong or bad. It was asleep because it simply didn't have the awareness to know that it even existed. So all we've ever known is the brain's perceptions and interpretations. That's kind of what the essay was pointing towards. And that when the prefrontal lobe came into play, suddenly the self became aware that it, it was in there. We became aware of ourselves. The prefrontal lobe really seems to be, once we had, because by the time we became Cro-Magnon or whatever man, we hit the top of the food chain. At that point, it's like, it's okay now to work on the, it's okay to, now that we've got our awareness of the environment, our control over the environment, now it's okay for the self to become aware of itself. I'm looking at really the perfection of the evolution of a form, really. And I think that's why we're such at odds, is because there's really no point of reference for this, you know? I mean, we're waking up and we're, it's like the shame of dreaming. We're trying to find someone to blame for it, when in fact that's the wrong way of looking at it. We should just be elated at the liberation that we don't have to do it anymore. That the body, this was at the one of the last essays on the ontological system, was an open letter to the body, that the body has really done a superb job getting us where we're at, you know. It's not its fault that it has its nature. It's not our fault that we were subject to its nature. We did not have the prefrontal lobe to awaken us to the fact that we weren't the body. We were just, the body was our point of entry into this experience that we're having. Yeah, that sounds really groovy.
So it sounds like what you're getting at is that the brain is a mechanism for survival. And when we evolved out of survival mode because the world was such a, the body's world was such a violent place, we grew a prefrontal lobe to aid the brain in becoming self, or being aware of self, in evolving into self.
No, it'd be the other way around. The brain's not evolving into self, unless you're a skeptic and a materialist. Then it might be. I'm sorry. The brain wasn't just for survival. I mean, the brain is our point of entry into the experience of living or being. We cannot experience unless we are separate from what we are experiencing. So we're required a form separate from all other forms in order to even experience and to be able to, the brain, you know, is the senses so that you can experience the other thing, but it's also the storage of the experience so that you can recall it. and be more aware. The more experiences you have, the more awareness you get, and then you need a larger brain, et cetera, et cetera. But the prefrontal lobe, I think, is evolution's way of separating. Now that the body is the head of the food chain, it was kind of the way of separating the dreamer from the dream. It was a mechanical thing. It was basically designed to separate the dreamer from the dream, so the dreamer could become aware of itself and also become aware that its experience of life was based upon there's a word there. It was based upon a perceptional fallacy, or based upon erroneous thinking, or what have you. It was based upon the brain's interpretation of everything. So it's kind of like, now that we can become awake, we can see the brain for what it is, and how, I mean, like I said, it's a superb machine, done a wonderful job. However, I'm the dreamer. I'm the dreamer, not it. So now that I'm separate from it, now that I have it objectified, its mechanics, its interpretation, its perceptions objectified, I can now experience through this very same machine awake and get a much more accurate interpretation and perception of what's going on.
So kind of what you're saying, and this goes into touching with what at the very end of the essay, is that kind of maybe the brain has kind of served its purpose, and that the self is maybe the next step in evolution, or the next step in okay, you typed in no. I'll let you respond to that.
We the self as it is to an awake person who's successfully divorce themselves from the idea that this reality is anything as what it appears to be. The brain as it is has become obsolete. However, we would still require some form in order to continue to experience, and we would also still require some form of storage, which is more or less what a brain is, in order to, because remember, we're not just storing our experiences that we're having in this lifetime. We still have all the experiences from all lifetimes still carrying with us from lifetime to lifetime. That's really what half of what the brain is. Half of what the brain is that all of our experiences are stored. That's that knowing when something pops up in your awareness. It's out of your own awareness. It's out of that own aggregate of experience and knowing. So the brain, like, serves two purposes. It serves that, but it also serves that it is our sensual tool. It is what we are able to experience with. So we're always going to require a brain of some sort, just not as it is now. As it is now, we realize that the reality that we're in is not what it appears to be. So we would choose, if we had a choice, we would choose a more accurate reality that reflects our awareness. This reality is just other forms. I can't get over saying that enough, because people just don't really realize that. That's all this world or universe really is just other animated forms like us. You know, there's David, there's Curtis, there's the tree, there's the cat, there's the bug. There, you know, that's all it is. It's just all animated forms that are going through the same evolutionary process from pond scum to prefrontal lobes. That's what we're all on, is that same evolutionary. Unfortunately, some get stuck in dead ends like rocks and whatever. So, you know, love your rocks, because they've been stuck in that one form forever.
Okay, so let me bat this around a little bit. Something went off of me when you initially said that, when you say survival and sensing, like, there was like there, I don't know how, there's no words for what I want to say. I'll let you get back on, like, there's just, it just kind of like clicked, but I don't have the words to describe what clicked in me.
That's a really good sign, Ahava, that you're into some new emergent information. Because if there were words to click, it would probably be something that you read by somebody else. So that's a real good sign. Embrace that. It also means that over a period of time, if you keep thinking about it, you'll find the language, or the language will come to you as you ask questions. You'll get answers, and then you ask questions of those answers, etc. But that's a real good sign. Don't frump about that. That's a good thing. That means you haven't gotten anybody else's interpretation of this. You're trying to get your own. It just hasn't come to you yet, but that's a real good sign.
I'm goody. Yay!
Hey, DC, I think I and everybody else are adjusting to the information you dropped at the start of the session about how there isn't two separate consciousnesses at work, which is what helped me understand things, but that there's only one consciousness, and that is self. I have a problem with it too, because if there's not two separate consciousnesses, then how do you objectify from the other, because objectifying seems to be a very useful tool to separate self from body, even though they are, I guess, maybe the same thing. I'm kind of having a little bit of trouble with this, but I think it's really good to bring it up and flesh it out, as you say.
This is what's so difficult when you're into new information and you're seeing it. There's two or three you get on the mic here in a row that are having a real hard time coming up with the words. That's pure contemplation when you're just pushing into the unknown to get information. It's real hard to find language because, again, you're not the brain, you know, looking through everything it's read and what it's heard or whatever. This is the self pressing into the unknown. It's like, there's just no words, you know. I think as you were talking, James, it just kind of occurs to me that the word consciousness really may not be applicable or may not be accurate in this case. I don't know the correct way of wording it otherwise than saying that there's only one dreamer. So, and that the body is how it dreams or how it experiences, and the self has believed it was that tool rather than the one using the tool. And even as I'm saying it, I realize, yes, that don't sound good either. But we are trying to describe something that we're just figuring out. So there may not be a language yet for it, but do you understand on an energy level or on a non-energy level? Do you understand on an awareness level what we're talking about? It doesn't necessarily, or even what we're hinting towards or what we're imaging in our minds. If you can understand that part, the language will eventually come to us. As long as we're all kind of on the same page and understanding that the brain is not a separate consciousness. However, it is the tool in which we are conscious. Boy, look at all them hands. We're on a roll now.
Yeah, you're right. It is hard to find a language, and I don't necessarily think that consciousness is the right word for it. I think basically what we've been talking about for the last little while is that you're basically talking about the mind, because the self has to have the brain to experience, and I believe that's what you know, what you're getting at is that the idea of the mind, you know, is that the self plus the body, and you know, instead of being, like we've been talking about the last couple of days, having those two being separate, is it's actually the mind.
This just came to me, and I don't know if it's relevant, but as you were talking and as I've heard the responses, I don't know how to word this properly, but it's almost as if in order for this self to be completely awake and be able to experience the things that it experiences, that there has to be some type of harmony that's achieved between the body and brain with the self in order to, like, move forward. They have to work together in order for our level of consciousness as far as the self goes, in order for it to expand. And also with that, once they've worked in harmony, there the self is basically, like Ali said, the one in control, and it can override the desires and the wants of the body in order to achieve a different level of consciousness.
We come to this reality in a form, and the form is the body. I don't quite know where the brain falls into this, but becoming self is when we realize and embrace that we are not our form. And what role the brain plays in that, I think, is what we're trying to get at. Body and the brain, DC says the body and the brain are basically the same thing. So I guess, would you be daring enough to say that the brain is just form, or the brain is part of form? It just came to me that we come to this world in this human form, and waking up is the self, pure witness, just not identifying with form anymore, and objectifying form.
Okay, I'm going to throw this out there in response to James, and going back to what I said earlier. There is form, and we are in form. But when the self becomes, like Ali said, in charge of that form, or in control of that form, there's a level of consciousness that happens with both things, as far as both of them understanding where they are with each other. So you can't, like DC says, you can't have form without the self, or have self without the form, but they have to work in harmony with one another in order for us to achieve the next level of consciousness. The self will, like DC says, the body will never be more than a tool, but once you're able to utilize that tool properly, the self at that point then can take over, and our level of consciousness can then expand.
I gotta tell you, I hope you guys are as excited as I am. This is just so cool to watch a group of people in contemplation together feeding off of each other. That's exactly how contemplation in a group works. You say something, someone else picks up on something, they come in and say something which triggers someone else to come in, and it's wonderful to watch in action. I'm very proud of you guys. This is amazing to be witness to it. That's the difference between sitting and listening to music and actually getting on the mic. Isn't it cool? The two things I typed up there I felt were really kind of important. It was the best I could find a language for what we've been talking about, is that in essence, we believe we are the mind rather than the self using a brain, or rather than the self plus a brain. We believe that we are that mind, or ego, as a lot of people like to use that word. We are that dream. And going in line with what Ahava and Ali were getting to, that once correctly perceived that we are the self, we are the dreamer, once correctly in balance, that the self can become the creator rather than part of creation, which is what the next stage is, which I have not written about, which is ascension. That's what the waking process must be more or less designed for, is to get you ready for ascension, which is basically a new environment in a new form of choice rather than one of default, because you're still dreaming. Once you awaken, the next stage should be that you become creator of your own environment, not part of creation. I'll let it go with that, but that line in particular, we believe we are the mind rather than the self plus the brain, I think is really important. I don't know why, so I'm just saying it out loud.
A practice I've been doing lately is just observing the body and how it interacts and reacts with other people. And I feel like that gives me a really good separation. But it sounds like what you guys are getting at is that instead of just observing, is when you get to a point to being self, you essentially take control of this observing process and become, I guess, not become the script, but create script from self. I don't know if there's a answer for that, or it's just, I think it's more of an interjection right now.
Okay, this, when you were, DC, when you were talking about creation, this is a belief that I've had of my own for a really long time, and that was that we create using energy, and so, like, you said in one of your essays, and you've said this a couple of times, that we are the most powerful creators when we're dealing with other people, that we are the most powerful creators. So with that, does the self then create the energy, follows the thought? Okay, got it, thanks.
What you want to think of creation, this is what we do at night when our body finally gets tired and goes to sleep. You know, in the essay, that pool essay, where you're the swimming pool, where you're pulling yourself back and back and back, and you pull your face finally out of the pool, and you're separate. What creation really is you placing your face back into the pool, and then thinking, what is it that I'm looking at? What is it that I'm experiencing it? What is it that I'm hearing? That's what dreaming at night really is kind of like the self going back into that pool, which I call the passive principle. Other people call it the void, the oneness, the unity, what have you. But that's what creation really is the thinker, the dreamer, pressing the face back into that potential and then just thinking. And whatever they think basically comes to be. In dreams, it's very mutable. In bodies during the daytime, it's not. But in dreams, it's very mutable. It changes as your thoughts change, because you don't have the body in the way. You don't have you don't have this particular body in your way. In the dream, you have whatever form you take in the dream, which anybody who does a lot of dreaming knows that your body changes a lot even during the dream. Your environment changes a lot during the dream, just as your thoughts change. That, to me, is what creation is the self entering back into the passive principle, awake, you know, and just dreaming what it wants to dream, or imagining what it wants to live in, or what have you. So, we use energy. We aren't energy. We use energy. And energy, thought is energy, I would guess. In this case, thought is energy, because as you enter into that pure potential, whatever you think comes to be. And the question is who thought up all of this? You know? This is the atheist asking the big question. So who thought up all of this? And you know, there's your million-dollar question. It's interesting. Whatever it is, it's not conscious yet, although we are getting there.
I like the fact that you're an atheist. Because I do believe in a creator. I do believe in God and Goddess. And it's interesting to see your point of view as an atheist, but your one of your recent essays where you're actually toying with the fact when you said intelligent design. So I'm curious to see where that goes with you.
I think that for me, using the word creator or God, if it is unconscious, if it is impotent, if it is ineffectual, is just simply using a word that doesn't, it's not applicable. You can't apply it to this, you know. To me, there's no God present. If there was, why is there the amount of pain and suffering going on? That, to me, is the biggest proof against there being a conscious deity, is the amount of pain and suffering that exists. The excuses that believers use, well, it's free, you know, God gave us free will, easily can be counteracted by saying, well, I mean, would you give a child free will? If you had a swimming pool and a two-year-old was running towards that swimming pool and you knew it couldn't swim, would you just, you know, let it jump in the pool and drown because, well, I'm giving it free will? Or would any conscious, loving being do anything they could to save that child? Well, of course you would, and so wouldn't a deity if they were conscious. So to me, if it is an if we're a part of an evolving, slowly awakening aggregate consciousness, you know, if we're a cell of that organism, is it applicable to refer to it as God? The word God just doesn't fit. To me, God is a conscious, it would have to be a conscious being, a conscious creator. Whatever has created all of this has been quite unconscious. However, evolution has been exceptionally brilliant. So again, is evolution the creator, or is evolution an effect of creation? And these questions are so circular, you can chase your tail for another couple lifetimes, you know. I try not to attack questions that I know nobody's ever been able to answer, and that there is no proof for, even if you did answer them. I try to attack or attempt to answer questions that are provable, because it'll get me closer to whatever the unprovable is, eventually, I hope. But I'd like to think of myself, too, that I'm a very thoughtful atheist. This is what the whole idea of contemplation and being awake is about, is that you don't put yourself in a box. You don't limit your beliefs in a box that are predefined, that have boundaries that you're not allowed to go past. That's what makes us special, is that we are allowed to question our beliefs. We are allowed to ask the big questions and just say, you know what, I don't know. It's okay to say, I don't know, if you don't.
There's like, who created the universe and who created pond scum? And those questions for me always stick out. I believe in God, but maybe not the way God is considered in like Christianity, or you know, in the Muslim faith, and I grew up in a Jewish household, so I do believe in God, but my interpretation of God and Goddess are just something that I came to on my own, as far as what was going on in my life or the things that have manifested in my life.
If I'll bring you back to an essay I wrote a long time ago, which was where I first started this journey into awakening. I had reduced everything to two principles, which was the active principle and the passive principle. Principle just means what something is at its original state. It hasn't changed at all. It's just at its original undifferentiated state. And because of the experience that I had in transpersonal meditation, I saw the passive principle, which is where all things come from. That unity, oneness, non-duality, that to me is the passive principle, and that's where all things come from. I then had to, I realized that I did not come from that. I was separate from that. So I had to have a source too. And that source I called the active principle. This is something that is reflected throughout creation. Active principle being masculine, the creator. Passive principle being passive, the womb that all creation comes out of. So the masculine enters the passive and creation is born, or consciousness is born. Once you've reduced God to active principle, which you can say God, and passive principle, which you can say Goddess, once you've reduced it to that, do you need the label of God or Goddess anymore, which has so much baggage attached to it? For 99.9% of the population, when you use the word God, they are thinking conscious being. I mean, do you need to have those words, where active principle and passive principle to me seem a better fit, because they are not conscious, they are where consciousness is born from. That once the two, for whatever reason, you know, there's these two latent principles that are separate from each other, and for whatever reason, that Big Bang, in other words, the two came together, and when the two came together, when the active entered into the passive, suddenly all of creation sprung. That makes infinite amount of sense to me. I don't know if anybody is aware of the fact that the Big Bang did not happen as a singularity. Most Big Bang theorists believe that original burst of energy happened throughout the universe all at once. In other words, the subatomic particles all came out of that passive principle all at once, not from a singularity, which again makes more sense than everything that is coming from one little spot. It makes more sense if the passive principle is infinite and the active principle is infinite, that it would happen everywhere at once. That makes sense? This is groovy.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense, and actually I can see, you're so brilliant, that I see that. I can definitely see that, the active and the passive principle. It makes perfect sense.
My active and passive principle is your God and Goddess, in other words. But I can still call myself an atheist, because atheism to me means a non-belief in a conscious deity. I can't see these principles as deities. I can see them as the origin of all things, but I can't see them as deities.
I think that my belief in God, and this is something that, like, I've struggled with, because my twin is an atheist, and this is a conversation that we have all the time. And I think that it's easier for me to refer to them as God and Goddess, but my vision of God and Goddess isn't the typical vision, just because of where I've gone and the things that I've experienced.
I wonder too if you're use of the words is an intuition of what is, you know. You may be using a masculine and feminine term because of your intuition that all creation arises from a masculine and feminine joining.
Yeah, I would say that's it.
I mean, you get the idea that the active enters the passive, the child is Christ, or Ka, or soul, or consciousness. You know, this same creation myth has been played over and over and over in all of the different religions and philosophies, but it's basically the same story that we've all, after all, everybody's ever written about it has experienced it, if my ontological system is correct. We all started out as those initial subatomic particles and have worked our way up to prefrontal lobes. we all have kind of that creation myth as part of our experience way, way, way back, but it's still part of everybody's experience. We were all there at the beginning. We're all here now. So that same idea of the masculine entering the feminine and the child or consciousness is born is part of pretty much every faith and religion since the beginning of time. And I concur.
What just occurred to me is that I've read your ontological system, and at its core, it makes perfect sense. So when I'm referring to God and Goddess, the way you've worded things and the things that you believe actually make perfect sense as far as, you know, the way we've evolved and that kind of thing. It is the active and passive principle who I put the name of God and Goddess on, but, you know, there's the story of creation where, you know, God breathed life into Adam and this, that, and the other. But when I see it from your perspective, it makes perfect sense, and I would say that it supports the active and passive principle.
I hope it at least makes more sense than some supernatural being doing something, you know? I hope it does. Time will tell. I'm really amazed at people that, like, with me, reincarnation is this is really a problem with I'm going to call it our ontological system, because we're all kind of on the same page. The real problem with it is that we have to use their language for new emergent information, you know? So, like, reincarnation plays a central part in my understanding, but it's not reincarnation as the word is used by other religions. It's the idea that as you progress, you need more complex, you know, as you fill the cup, as you fill this brain, as a cat, in other words, you will require a more complex, more expanded brain and nervous system in order to hold that awareness that you have as through all your lifetime. So a new brain has to emerge. And of course, a cat today has a new brain in a higher mammal. We don't yet. We're getting there, I hope. I hope that's what all this is basically doing, is triggering a new form of our choice, I hope. But I'm really amazed at people that don't believe in reincarnation. Then why are you a white Western male? Why is another person, you know, a starving African child? Why is another animated form a mouse, you know? And they're, well, it's just random. Does that make sense to you? Or... And all the guidance and knowing that comes along with being what you are, does that make more sense to you, or does it make more sense that you are progressing through an evolutionary timeline of consciousness, expanding and diverging and becoming, you know, which makes more sense to you when you can see it reflected in you can see evolution reflected in your own life, you know?
Yeah, it does make sense. There was something else that was on my mind, and then it slipped away. when I remember, I'll get back on the mic.
Okay, we have 30 minutes left, so if anybody wants to bring up a topic or question or what have you, have at it. Now would be the time. I had wanted to tell all of you something very personal, which of course is going to come out on the tape, but it's something that I think would really, I have a very unique experience, which I think would be really enlightening to some of you, but I've got to think for a second, so I want someone else to get on the mic and say something, but I've got to think for a second if it fits into today's conversation or not.
That I remember the thing that I wanted to bring up. In Judaism, reincarnation is something that we're taught, that we do evolve. And when you're talking about a starving child in Africa and a, you know, and a you know, white male in the United States, I see the evolution, because you can't run before you walk. So I do see evolution. Yeah, you do have to start somewhere, and I do see it. But I believe in reincarnation, because I grew up understanding that reincarnation was something that happened.
Right, that there's not, it has nothing to do with karma. It just happens because you're not fulfilled, or you're not liberated, or you're not fully evolved. So, you know, why do we have to keep coming back? Because we're not fully evolved yet. Evolution does move in one direction. I really get a kick when someone says, my next lifetime, I want to come back as a butterfly. It's like, do you realize what your awareness would do to that butterfly brain? Pop!
I can switch off the recording if you'd like, DC.
No, it's something that I want on recording. Why don't I just go ahead and do it? This is very personal, but it is one of the proofs that I have. So let me key down the mic, and this seems like a good spot to throw it in and see what happens. One of the reasons that I became hyper aware that the body and the self were separate happened when my mother had her strokes, and I was at the hospital. And the first couple, I did not leave my mother's side otherwise than to go out and, you know, have a smoke and use the bathroom. That was one of the things that I had promised her, was that she would not be alone when she passed away. So for 8 days, I camped out in her room. For the first couple of days, my mother was still there, and her soul or self was still there in the body, and she was able to communicate with me, speak to me, not terribly coherently, because remember, she had had some strokes. On the third day, I became aware, I was awake at the time, and on the third day, I became aware that she had left her body. And one of the side effects of that was she was no longer able to speak. However, she was still, the body was still aware that I was there and reacted to me, but it did not communicate with me whatsoever, coherently. It would point at its lips. It wanted a swab of Vaseline put on its lips so that, 'cause the lips were cracking. She had asked in her living will that she had no artificial ways of staying alive, in other words. So she didn't have a feeding tube, she didn't have any water. We just were able to comfort her in whatever way I could, or I was able to comfort her in whatever way I could. But I had the experience of my mother in her body, and I had, or when I say my mother, you understand I'm saying the self. I had the experience of my mother's self in the body. Then I had the experience, and this is what is so rare, and I think why you'll understand why it's such a special experience. I got to experience a body without a self in it. Still connected, but without it in it. And I was aware of what I was experiencing, and it was equally traumatic as it was fascinating, because I saw the body for what it really was, which is an animal, so to speak. This is why I say it's so personal. One of the things that the body was really fascinated with, which I have heard from other people, people on their deathbeds are also very fascinated with, was her genitalia. And I mean, very fascinated. She was very fascinated with it. It was very uncomfortable because she was constantly pulling the sheet down and putting her hands down there and feeling around. And, you know, it was embarrassing. But I guess it's a common thing. I've had other people that I know work in nursing homes say that it is a common thing. But you begin to see that there is a consciousness there. I don't know how else to describe it. There is a consciousness there, or an awareness there, but it is on a very mechanical animal level where when my mother was in, or while my mother's self was in the body, there was an entirely different demeanor, an entirely different communication going on. The body left by itself was very tuned into its physicality, so to speak. I don't know how else. I mean, to me, I don't know how to put this into words to get it across that it is an exceptionally rare experience for an awake self to experience a body that has been vacated by the self. It wasn't what I knew, quote-unquote, my mother to be. I was looking at literally an organism on the bed that was, you know, fascinated with its own physicality. I was watching the patterns of the brain going, because my mother used to do math. If she had to figure out what, you know, this plus that was, she'd do it on her leg with her finger, and she always did math on her leg. And that last 8 days, she maniacally, or the body maniacally, did math on its leg. I looked to see if it was, if any of it made any sense, whether any of it was actually numbers, and it was just like chicken scratching. But I know that that's what it was. It was a habitual something to do. It was filling in almost every moment. It was filling in with doing something. It didn't want to just lie there, and it was just constantly either throwing back the sheets and touching itself, or it was doing that math. I finally gave it a pen. I put a pen in its hand. And can you hear how uncomfortable it is to use the words it? I put a pen in its hand and let it just sit there and write. It wasn't writing anything legible or coherent because I was watching. And that was really, to me, a pivotal moment of experience in seeing the difference between a self and a body. It was, I don't think you could get any better proof than that particular experience. I don't know of anybody ever writing anything or saying anything in my lifetime that more emphasizes that there are two separate things there. There is a self and there is the body. I welcome any comments. I could have stretched that out a lot more than I did. With my father, when he passed away, I was by his side too. He was still in his body. Although he was comatose, he was still in his body. And when he died, I felt him leave his body. And, you know, I've written about it on the website. There was this tremendous lifting, this tremendously beautiful lifting. And, I mean, you could feel the self being released. With my mother, since she was already out of her body when she passed away, I didn't feel anything. And for the first couple of days, I kept thinking, you know, I always thought my mother was pretty, not awake, aware, but I always thought she, you know, was a pretty vibrant woman. And it was odd that I didn't feel anything. And it didn't dawn on me later the reason why I didn't feel that release is because she had already vacated the body. So all I witnessed was a body actually dying, where in my father's case, I experienced my father leaving his body. I'm really grateful and blessed to have experienced both of their deaths. I learned a lot from it as an awake person, you know.
I was with my father when he passed away as well, holding his hand. And there was one thing that happened that makes me now believe that he was in his, that the self was present in the body. My dad had a long battle with diabetes, and he was on dialysis, and there was a whole lot going on. And I basically, you know, got a phone call, flew into Vegas, then drove down to California with my sister. And I knew that my dad was holding on. Everybody, you know, they were like, he's waiting for you. And when I, you know, was able to come in, and he was not conscious. He was completely unconscious. But, you know, I told him I was there, and, you know, and that he could leave, and there were tears that came down his face. And I actually felt him leave. When he passed, I felt the separation. Now I have language for it. Then I didn't. but I actually felt the separation. And a few minutes after he died, well, probably about 15 minutes after he died, he actually spoke to me very clearly, moved almost through me, to let me know that he was okay. And I, now that I understand it, it was his self that was conscious and able to show, you know, some form of emotion, even though he was not conscious, but he was conscious. And it was a beautiful transition. It really is when you're with somebody, when they make that transition, it's absolutely beautiful, bittersweet. But I have a language for it. Then I didn't, but I understand now what went on with him at that time.
That was really the key with my mom, was that, you know, it's one thing to read about it or write about it or have the concept in your head that a body is separate from the self, that they're two separate things. But it is an entirely different thing to experience it. I mean, it was fascinating as much as it was traumatic, because you become aware that that's what you're in too. I mean, my mother became, in some of her stuff, she became very vulgar. Her body became very vulgar. And you recognize that that's what you're in too. I know there are some times when I'm in contemplation. This is so embarrassing, and I'm sitting here putting it on the website. That is so funny. But that's what makes, we're rebels, you know. We're not afraid of our appearance. I'll notice sometimes I'm in contemplation, and I'm in that zone, and I all of a sudden become aware that my hands are down my pants. I mean, as oddly as that is, you know, and all of a sudden you're like, just, hey, knock it off. Because that's what it is. It all of a sudden has nothing to do besides just sit there while you're exploring and experimenting and contemplating. So it just starts playing with itself. And that's what I mean by traumatic. All of a sudden you realize you're in this nasty, really nasty ass bag of bones that, you know, the moment you look away, it's either touching itself or thinking some base vulgar thought or something, you know. I can't wait to get my new body. Can't wait to create my new body. This one's just nasty.
I don't know if it's just not bone. I don't know if it's just not me evolving past myself right now, but I actually, when it comes to the body, I kind of have like a good relationship with it. I mean, I don't look at it as vulgar or anything like that. I just kind of like experience it, and I don't really pay that close attention to, like, you know how you said vulgarity.
I can't.
I have a interesting relationship with the body. My son's on the phone.
Yeah, we'll let you stay off the phone because we can hear him real clearly. I mean, I don't just look at my body that way. It's just funny, as a male, you know, that's what it's fascinated with. And I'm thinking, geez, if I ever go into a coma or I'm like my mother and I've left my body, I'm going to be sitting there playing with myself on the hospital bed. That's just going to be embarrassing. It's like, DC, you'll be so long gone by then, you won't care what your body's doing back on the bed, you know? But anyways, anybody who's a male in the room can tell you that that is what males are fascinated with, is our appendages.
I think because you guys have the desire to procreate, where women not necessarily. And men, I've noticed, are more physical creatures than women are.
Trust me, in my case, it has nothing to do with procreating. Let's change the subject. Anybody? We got 15 minutes. Anybody got anything else to add that's not base and vulgar? I think I've pretty much muddied up this chat. This was Chrissy's first time in our chat. Now I have to wonder if she'll show up again. Anything to add, David? You've been quiet today, and I know how much our listening audience loves to hear your voice.
Listening other times, you know, I have heard some of the recordings.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, so you already kind of knew what to expect, although I haven't got onto these subject lines before. I promise I won't go back to them anytime soon.
I feel like I'd like to read that essay that you read out at the start another few times.
And please, anybody, because, you know, you've all been participating in this, please go and read the essay and respond to it, because the essay has got a lot of things missing, and I really do think that some of your responses will help flesh it out. Also, if there is some way, David, to do a reply with a link to the chat, that would really be cool, too, since, you know, the chat was a direct consequence of the essay.
Well, we could try the public room thing and see how that goes. And I've put a link to it as a comment. How does that sound?
I think that that's the best way of doing it, as long as it's not too much trouble for you. I think all of us owe David a great deal, a debt of gratitude for not only the fact that he's recording it, but that it does take some effort to get it posted, and you know, having the account and everything. So, you know, don't be afraid to thank him every time you see him, because there's going to be quite a wealth of information in those chats as the time goes. I mean, those chats are really going to be probably more important than the website itself, you know, I hope.
Well, I've said before, I'm quite clear that what I do to help is enlightened self-interest. And if anyone else benefits from it, then that's good.
I'm kind of amazed when I go back and listen to him at how much I've completely forgotten what the chat was about. I mean, that's one of the problems with being present. You don't have that good a recall at what you did even 15 minutes ago. So lots of times I'll go back. It's kind of like you say, you want to read that essay a few times to get it. Lots of times I'll go back a couple times to listen to the chats, and just there's a sentence here or a few sentences there that just really jump out at me and open up another whole Pandora's box of contemplation, you know. But it's made these chats also really easy to fill in the 2 hours, because there's a lot to talk about. We really are defining what I consider to be an emergent awareness, and we're finding a language for it and defining. I think today's was especially cool, because there was four or five of us that were adding to it as we went, in a group contemplation almost. That's what a group contemplation feels like. I've done them before, where somebody says something and something pops up in your awareness, and then you say something and something pops up in somebody else's awareness, and it's wonderful, because after a while you can barely keep up with it. There's so much information coming through, and you're all feeding off each other's awareness, but it's also that combination of energy and creative, you know, vibration or what have you, in aggregate, is just, it's wonderful. It's like tapping into the central computer, only there is no such thing.
I really, really, really enjoy these sessions, because they help tremendously, and, you know, and it's nice that there are people that have the same questions that I do, and we can, you know, throw them around, because we address so much in these sessions. So
I can tell you, as an awake person, that I did not feel a great deal of reaction to the story about my mother, which tells me that I don't think you really got what I was putting out there, that on an experiential level, I don't think, I feel, when I'm talking, I can feel reaction to what I'm saying, and there was very little reaction, as if, I think it's because I had a lot invested in it, it was my experience, but it's something that I really want you to contemplate on, since we have a day off tomorrow. It's something I'd really like to see you contemplate on, that the idea that this home that you've been in for how many of her decades, if you were to leave it, not completely, but if you were to leave it, that it is able to function without you. You're basically a power cord to it at that point, you know, but it is still able to function without you being within it and still able to interact with its environment, I think that that's a very powerful awareness to have, especially of the separation of self and body.
I heard what you said, and it's difficult to take it all in one go. I think if you're looking for a homework assignment for next week, DC, that could be it.
I'm not sure how much I don't really know, David. That's kind of a Pandora's box in a way. I'm not sure how much people should really delve into that, because it may have an adverse effect on the body or on the self. I mean, to me, it was very traumatic because it was the first time I had seen body consciousness, you know, for lack of a better word. Like we've said earlier, consciousness may not be the absolute correct word on it, but it was really a traumatic experience to... It wasn't my mother anymore. It still looked like her, but it wasn't her anymore. And this thing, this organism, I like to use the word organism because it really brings it into, you know, into your awareness just how alien it was. This organism was on the bed going through its motions, in most cases very mechanical motions, and it was still alive. I mean, it was still life, and it was just really uncomfortable as someone that's in a body too. It was really uncomfortable to recognize that this thing that I'm in has got almost an existence of its own. I mean, it can't, obviously, once the self severs the tie, it's over. But to me, it was just, I'm not sure if that's a place any of you really want to go, because if you think about it very much, it may be kind of unsettling, as it was for me. Like I said, I don't think it can be as unsettling to actually be in the room experiencing that organism as it is thinking about it, but still, I don't know if there's a great deal of benefit in it otherwise than it was experiential proof for me that there's a huge difference between self's awareness and the body's awareness. Beyond that, I'm not sure I'd even want to go there, but if you guys want to, you're more than welcome to.
Well, for us, reading your essays and hearing you speak, it's not such an alien concept. It's something you've talked about for a long time. So it won't be quite such a shock for us. I think I'll leave it there.
Yeah, that's Sasan? Okay, that's probably why you didn't get too much of a reaction from that experience, from that, was because, like David was saying, we've kind of, even in these chats, talked about it a little bit. But yeah, I had something similar like that happen to me when I was younger, where it's like, you know, my, soul almost left its body, and I could almost, or myself kind of left its body, and I could kind of see myself, my body from up above, like walking around on its own, and it was kind of disturbing because it reminded me of what DC was saying. It looked like me, but it didn't have It was just kind of disturbing because now it would be, I could kind of understand it a little bit more because, but, you know, that was before, you know, I did any studies, but it was kind of disturbing, you know, and then that's kind of why DC was saying to be careful with it, because then you can never kind of look at yourself in the mirror again the same way after a while, you know, after you've seen yourself for kind of what it is. But it was kind of disturbing. I don't know if that's exactly what you were talking about, but I had a similar experience like that.
I keep forgetting, too, that, I mean, when we're in this room, it is self-to-self, so there would be a much broader understanding from my words, because I'm communicating on that level with y'all. It can go the other way, though, too, in a way, Curtis and David, that, I mean, that's the whole idea when you get to the ascension level, is there's got to be a divorce from this reality. It has to be that deep of a separation that you no longer are attached or attracted to anything here. This just isn't real. I don't want to be here anymore. We can change a lot of things in this in ourselves, in this reality. We can change a lot of things, but this reality is never going to be anything more than pain and suffering. It's never going to be anything more than bodies requiring consumption of other bodies, requiring, you know, rape and murder and what have you. So that's, I know people like, why are you looking at the negative? Because that does exist, and that is what this reality is. It's basically feeding. It's all feeding on each other. I want to live in a reality that does not require food, does not require the you know, using of other evolving forms in order for me to survive. So in a way, it doesn't hurt to look at the body as what it is. It is part of this pain and suffering realm, and we don't want to be in it anymore. Now that we know that it is not what we are, we want what it offers, which is the ability to experience and the ability to store that experience and to sense. We want what it has to offer, but we don't want it in the present packaging. We want a new packaging. And that is what triggers evolution, as far as we know, is the necessity. So once it is in our thought, that necessity that we need a new form, you know, we're sending a very clear message to evolution, or whatever is behind evolution, hey, we know this isn't what we are anymore. We don't want to be in this anymore. We still want a body, but we don't want this kind of a body. It should trigger a new form next time around. Or maybe this time around. You know, maybe you just drop the body and you're on your way. Who knows?
I know it's like it's time for this discussion to end, but I was wondering what you felt about astral projection, because it almost sounds like when the self separates from the body, that would be considered astral projection.
I think that'll make a wonderful Monday topic, should you remember to ask at 3 p.m. on Monday, or 1 p.m. or 12 p.m. your time. So we're going to leave it at that, since it is 5 p.m. I thank you all for joining. If you go ahead and end the recording, David, then we can sit and chat a little after. Let's just keep it off topic so that we can start the new topic on Monday. Because that's something I've been thinking about, actually, astral traveling. I've been thinking about that lately.